And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. If this is any indication before this show how the next 4 hours are going to be, it's going to be like Chase and I's ride from Dallas to Kansas City. It's going to be bumpy. Okay, there's not going to be any service. We're not going to serve any drinks. There's not going to be any peanuts or pretzels passed out. Stay in your seats with your seat belts buckled. This is going to be a bumpy ride.
My head's going to be up against the wall because I'll be asleep and it's just bouncing.
I'm very nervous.
I was in the protocol after I got off the
plane. I was going to say, I've thought about this more. You weren't sleeping. You were put to sleep by that plane ride. I think you were laying against because you had the window seat. I think you knocked yourself out.
Probably. I was in the protocol.
Because I don't know how you could sleep on that plane ride.
Yeah, I did.
I had white knuckles. White knuckles and going, just please let us land. Please let us land. Get us to KC. Get us to KC. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell behind the glass along for the ride. D-Mace has stood over, or no, he's not standing. He's decided to hang with us for a segment as we get prepared today because Brian Bellick is going to join us at 10:15. One of your buddies.
Oh, Brian.
In about 15 minutes.
Oh, Brian. Brian is great, man. He's one thing I really enjoyed about Brian is that he treated you like a veteran player. If you were a veteran player, he treated you like a veteran player. And he expected you to be responsible. Not many coaches do that because, you know, coaches want to micromanage everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't that way. And I can recall times, you know, during two-a-days, man, when two-a-days was tough, he used to just pull, you know, veteran guys, no, you're not practicing today. You know, after we've went, you know, a few days in a row, no, you're not practicing today. And may sit out. And I'm thinking like, okay, now what am I supposed to do? Twiddle my thumbs over here. Just what am I supposed to do, coach? I'm all dressed. I'm ready to go. Now sit down. Guys enjoy playing for Coach Bellick.
I wonder why he never got another head coaching opportunity.
It baffles me, man.
Mike Mularkey got three bites of the apple.
That's a lot of coaches that shouldn't have gotten.
Brian Bellick won a Super Bowl and never got asked to coach again. I don't think.
I don't think. Unless he was right.
He's got a pretty sweet gig with the NFL Network.
But still,
too.
I mean, to know that it ended after that.
Yeah.
So many retreads.
He's been AFC championships, NFC championships, yeah. Super Bowls, 1-1. You wonder why he's never gotten that opportunity. Or a serious opportunity to be a head coach again in the NFL because there have been so many retreads that really didn't deserve it. And, you know, he should have at least got a shot. And maybe he has. And he just was like, nah, that's not quite for me. So,
you have played in that atmosphere that the Titans are going to tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
You understand it better than most. What are the Titans walking into tomorrow night?
They are walking into what teams used to walk into in 99, 2000, 2001, when they walked into then Adelphia Coliseum. They're walking into a bunch of rabid Baltimore fans, a fan base that's re-energized now. And it's because of Lamar Jackson. He has galvanized that city. He has taken that city by storm. And there's nothing you can say bad about Lamar Jackson. He's walking on water right now.
Yeah.
But I think it all starts with John Harbaugh. He's kept that team intact because they've been through some ups and downs with him. But his seat was hot.
Yeah, for a while.
He's reinvented himself as a head coach, and you don't see that a lot of times because a lot of head coaches are just stubborn.
Well, the good ones do though.
Yeah, but the good ones they find a way to reinvent themselves. They find a way to connect with the younger player. And John has found a way, somehow, some way, to connect with the younger players. And, man, they would truly run through a brick wall for that guy. So they're walking through a situation where the city is going to be purple the night before. And then as they're driving to the city, it's going to be purple everywhere. And fans are going to be out. And the way they got to come in, what they got to ride through, I mean, it's going to be a bunch of Baltimore Raven fans. Tennessee travels well, but I don't think they're going to get many seats in that M&T Bank Stadium.
You were playing in the heyday of Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. You've seen Michael Vick in his heyday and what he was doing in the NFL. Where does Lamar Jackson – because everybody's calling him, you know, Michael Vick 2.0, whatever you're saying is. I saw Michael Vick in his heyday. Willie's – we were – We were covering them. I mean, I remember when they came here. I remember when they came here to practice, the Titans. I mean, he is it, dare I say, Lamar Jackson's better, isn't he?
It's not even close, is it?
Not even. I don't know if you can say it's not even close.
I think the reason why, because we didn't truly get the fullness of Michael Vick, obviously because of what happened off the field. And he was out of football for 2 years. It's sort of like the Muhammad Ali thing. You're out for some years and you didn't really truly get the measure of who he was as a boxer because there were those years that he missed. And it was the years, and believe me, I'm not comparing Michael Vick to Muhammad Ali outside of their sport. I'm saying inside of the sport. There were 2 years that Michael Vick, we just missed him. Just think how much better he could have been. Had he had those 2 years. Well, you look at Lamar Jackson, and the thing that I love about him is I had a chance to talk to John last year about Jackson, and he said, this kid's special. And this was before he wasn't even playing when they came here. He said, this kid is special. Believe me, he's special. And then I asked someone else that was upstairs in the press box, and they echoed the same thing. This kid is special. When he start playing, watch out. He's special. And when he starts, you just saw it. And then the smartest thing John has done thus far is to fire Marty Morningwig and put in insert Greg Roman. And then they adapted their offense, their personnel to their quarterback. They didn't ask him to fit into a system. They made a system for him. And it's working.
And does Greg coaches Roman, make that mistake where they don't do that.
Oh, no question. But Greg Roman was the OC in San Fran whenever Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers were facing the Ravens in the Super Bowl in New Orleans.
Yeah, Greg was there when I was there. Greg was helping with the offensive linemen the years I was there. And, you know, he had a lot of responsibility. So I think him seeing it from an offensive lineman's view, knowing what works, how the offensive linemen like to block, what are some of their favorite things. And then you look at their offensive linemen, you know, from tackle to tackle, Brown and Stanley are two of the better tackles in the National Football League. Marshawn is going to turn out to be a Hall of Fame player. He's been that way since day one out of Iowa. And then they just got a bunch of guys on that front line that has bought into the system. And they love run blocking. They do it better than anybody in the National Football League. So, you know, it's just it's great watching this team play football. And Lamar's bigger than what people think. Got a chance to. He took a picture with Derek last year, and the kids. You think he was this small guy, but he's not. He's a bigger guy, and I know he's gotten bigger since now that he's playing. So it's going to be a tall task for the Titans. Whether they can do it or not, I don't know. But they're going to have to try to pull out everything to stop him.
Let's get back to the comparison to Vick because I think it's an interesting one. I'm looking at the stats here. Best season for Michael Vick was 2004 for Atlanta. He went 11-4 as a starter. They had a really good year. He completed 56.4% of his passes for 2,300 yards, 14 touchdown passes, and 12 interceptions. And he ran for 900 yards. He did have a season where he rushed for over 100, but his team wasn't as good. The passing stats were okay there. Just compare that to Lamar Jackson, 66% completion percentage, 3,100 yards passing, 36 touchdown passes, and 6 interceptions, a QBR of 81.1. And he rushed for 1,200 yards. I mean, it's a fun comparison, but
different game, though.
Yeah, different game.
The rules
different
are completely different today than they were when Michael Vick played.
But are you saying Michael Vick was at best an okay passer and a great runner? Lamar Jackson is a great runner, and those are great passing numbers.
Those are great, but I'm saying that because Derek knows this because he played in that era. What you could do on defense changed. Offenses. I mean, they got away with so much more than what they can do today.
But you would have to say that Vic's accuracy was not great.
No,
right?
and that was sort of the problem with Vic, and then not having those 2 years to hone in on his skill. And that they were playing a different type of offense. If I think Lamar is better than Michael Vick. I think Lamar, you know, his understanding. of the game, how he has adapted quickly. Not to say that Vic didn't put in the work, but I think this kid, Lamar Jackson, he takes offense to what people said to him before the draft. He takes offense to, you know, people wanting him to switch positions. He takes offense to what people said last year about him during the season. And then he takes offense in regards to how he played in the playoff game. He puts that all on him. So
yeah, because people were calling for Joe to go in.
Yeah, so when he went into the offseason, he was nothing but football. He was all football. And that's what when you start looking at the quarterbacks around the league, that's what you see about the greats. All they think about is football. Nothing else. They're not worried about anything else. It's eat, sleep, breathe football. How can I get better? And Lamar has figured this out quick. If I'm going to be more than what they said that I am, I need to put in the work. And he's putting in the work. And if he can continue to hover around 66% completion ratio, he will be unstoppable. If he dips below that, then that's when teams figure, okay, we could stop him because he's not a good passer. But if he stays in a high 60, he doesn't even have to be 70%. He stays in a high 60, he's completely unstoppable. There's nothing you can do to short of him getting injured. There's nothing you can do to stop him.
Yeah, you guys hit on it too. The system that they have built is perfect for him. It's built around him. It's interesting to compare the talent. I don't remember everybody on that Falcons supporting cast. And, of course, we had the comeback Vic did in Philadelphia. He didn't start the year as the starter, then jumped in there and had a great run for a while. That might have been his best year passing. So it'd be interesting to compare just the overall talent around him, because the system that the Ravens built is part of it. Just like any great quarterback, a lot of people would say Joe Montana benefited from that West Coast offense, but he was the perfect fit for that. It all goes together. And so you put it all there. Lamar Jackson is 19-3 since he took over as a starter. 19-3. I mean, nobody's really stopped him since he took over.
I guess my question, and Derek, you'll be able to answer this, is how long before he gets figured out, though, or does he get figured out? You know how this league works.
Hopefully tomorrow.
Hope tomorrow.
But here's a good start.
Here's the thing about this, because we were, you say that about any quarterback. Here's the thing. Did anybody say that about Tom Brady? Did anybody say that about Drew Brees? Has anybody said that about Aaron Rodgers? When will they get figured out? They'll never get figured
They've
out.
They've also evolved.
You know why? Because you said they evolved and they put in the work. I don't think you're going to ever figure this kid out. If he continues to evolve and put in the work, don't think you're going to figure him out.
That was the knock on Vic, right? Yeah. He wasn't putting in the work.
Exactly. So he didn't take it as seriously the first go around, I think, than he did the second go around. And as long as Lamar continues to have the attitude that he has toward the game, that I want to get better by all means, you're not going to figure him out. It's just short of injury, you're not going to figure him out unless Greg Roman leaves and whoever takes over, doesn't know the offense quite as well as Greg Roman. But again, that whole coaching staff went around the country figuring out a system on how to adapt it to Lamar Jackson. So if he steps away, meaning Greg Roman, because he will get a coaching job soon, head coaching job soon, they're going to have somebody else to replace him that can run that offense. That's what the Titans did with Arthur Smith. That's why they chose to hire from within.
I think Arthur Smith has been better.
Yeah, and they just said, everybody knows Arthur. He knows the offense. We're just going to keep him in the house, and we're going to keep on rolling. Well, it's going to be the same with Baltimore. So you're not going to figure this kid out. You're not. As long as he hovers around 67, 66, if he dips below that, then, yeah, you can figure him out. He becomes one-dimensional. But if he stays around that high 60 into 70, you're not going to figure this kid out.
All right, last thing is we got to get to Billick. Mm-hmm. What's the number the Titans have to get to win this game, in your opinion? Because you're not going to hold Baltimore to 13 points.
No, you're not. I think they have to be above 24.
They have to be above 24.
Yeah, they have to be above 24 to win this game.
So you think the Titans D can hold the Ravens to 24 or less?
They're going to have to somehow. That gives them a chance. Okay. 24 gives them a chance.
Okay. Good stuff, Derek.
No problem.
Appreciate
brother.
You sticking around. Have a great weekend.
No problem. Tell Brian I said hello.
We will.
I'll tell everybody in Baltimore you say hi.
Hey, man. Yeah. Yeah. Go to a couple of my
places. What's the deal? They're honoring Trent Dilfer, but they're not honoring you?
Hey, Trent won a Super Bowl, man.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and knocked out the Titans. So.
Yeah, even though it was
I think there's
the
some
defense.
Gamesmanship there.
As Jeff Fisher said the next day, did they even get a first down in the second half?
Yeah, they didn't. No. But Trent's a great guy, man. He won the Super Bowl, so.
D-Mace, good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
No problem, fellas.
Derek Mason, every Monday through Friday, weekdays 6 to 10 a.m. on Morning Drive. We'll come back with Brian Billick.
D-Mace with the mic drop
Ravens
on the way out of the studio.
We'll talk to him next. Good stuff from him. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, we say hello and good morning to former Ravens head coach Brian Billick. Brian, how you doing?
Doing good today.
Derek Mason was just in studio with us. He just left, and he told us to make sure to tell you hello. So he had some nice things to say about you when we were talking to him last segment.
Oh, I appreciate it, Chase. He's one of my favorite players, one of the hardest working pros I've ever been around.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said one of the things he appreciated about you was you treated the veterans like veterans, and he said there was times when you would come up, and remember, this was for a lot of young listeners that are like, two-a-days, I don't understand. Yes, there was actually two-a-days in training camp back then that you would come up to him and say, you know what, take the second one off. And Derek was like, what do I do now? I'm suited up. I'm ready to practice. But he appreciated that you made, you know, gestures like that to the veterans.
Well, you got to take care of them, particularly ones that you know are going to work hard. And sometimes you have to help them help themselves because they want to work so hard they're going to I didn't want to have his best game left on the practice field.
Now, you know, in this market, I mean, Titans, Ravens, it doesn't take much to get people really interested, especially a Titans, Ravens playoff game. I don't know if we'll ever be able to recreate back in the day when you were on the sidelines and Jeff Fisher, who we had on earlier in the week, was on the sidelines. I mean, that week when the Ravens were coming to town or the Titans were going to Baltimore, that's all anybody wanted to talk about. But it's certainly starting to feel like that. When you look at this Ravens team, what do you see? I mean, they've obviously been almost unstoppable on offense.
Yeah, and they're the most complete team. Obviously, what Lamar Jackson doing is stunning in his level of production. But I think it overshadows the fact that they are so legitimate. They've got maybe the best three tight ends combination in the league. Big, physical, can hurt you down the field. Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown can obviously make big plays, catch the ball underneath, break tackles, and make big plays. Good, solid offensive line. But more importantly, or equally importantly, they may have the best defense in the National Football League right now. You're not going to run on the inside, and their secondary is solid. If they have to stack the box to stop the run, which they're likely going to have to do against the Titans, that secondary is going to match up very, very well. That's going to be the challenge for Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. To when they do want to stack the box to stop the run, can you make those big plays down the field? So that's, to me, they're the best team in the NFL right now because they're the most complete team in the NFL.
Now, conversely, when you see the Titans, what do you see?
Outstanding team. Obviously, their ability to physically run the ball. Derrick Henry's been brilliant. I did a piece on playbook. You saw the tail end of the game in that fourth quarter. New England had basically taken their goalie out of net. I mean, they had 10, 11 guys on the line of scrimmage to try to stop the run, and they couldn't. And Ryan Tannehill's been absolutely brilliant when you do that. His completion percentage, his ability to make big plays down the field. This defense is going to be challenged. They're going to have to commit to stopping Lamar Jackson, getting outside the edges. Again, I talked about it all year. But there's only one way you're going to stop that offense. You can't let Lamar Jackson get outside the edges. Now, if that being your focus, can they beat you just running Ingram and Edwards and then throwing the ball downfield? Sure they can. Yeah, they're capable of that. But if you let Lamar Jackson outside the edges, you will lose, period, game, set, match.
Brian Billick is with us. That being said, Coach, one of the things Jeff Fisher suggested was it might be a smart thing just to try to give ground and play well in the red zone. That might be your only chance to slow down the Ravens' offense. Do you agree with that?
That's a possibility, and it's not a bad plan. I don't know that I'm going to capitulate and just say, okay, tell you what, I'm just going to let you come down to the 20 every drive and see what we can do to hold up. But clearly, when you shrink the zones, again, with the importance being, yes, if you then bring a 5 and 6 man rush, not necessarily with the intent of sacking him, but just don't let him go anywhere. Put some pressure on him, make him throw in timing. Now you've reduced the areas. He's very good between the numbers, down the hashes, where he's not been as good as on the outside. 5 of his 6 interceptions have come outside the numbers. So throwing the ball on the outside has not been a strength. But stopping the run of Lamar Jackson doesn't mean you can't ignore Ingram and Edwards and their ability to run, but you cannot let Lamar Jackson be. Now, this is easier said than done. It's real simple to say, yeah, do this. It's not going to be easy. Don't get me wrong. And could he still beat you by just handing the ball off? When you look at San Francisco, probably played the Ravens as well as anybody and has, you know, one of the better defenses in the league. They held combined Ingram and Edwards to under 70 yards rushing. They only gave up 105 yards passing. All right. The problem is they gave up 120 yards rushing to Lamar Jackson and most of it outside the edges. So these other guys are capable, and they still have the ability to beat you like that. But as I've said before, and I'm not trying to be flippant about it, if you let Lamar Jackson outside the edge of your defense, you lose, period.
How much do you think, Coach, is the scheme that they have built around Jackson, and how much of it is it just simply that Jackson is such a special talent that we haven't seen in a long time?
They're doing a great job, the scheme, and Greg Roman, who was on my staff when I was in Baltimore, has done a brilliant job. But at the end of the day, Lamar Jackson is a unique dude. I mean, this guy, we have not seen the like of him. And what you have to give them the most credit for, in my opinion, is their willingness to let him do that. When I did their preseason games, I asked John Harbaugh, and I used Cam Newton's 139 carries in 2017 as the benchmark. Okay, is Lamar Jackson going to be over or under those 139 carries? And he didn't blink. He said, oh, absolutely, over, and by a lot. And to me, that's the most revolutionary thing they've done. They've bought all in. If he wants to carry the ball 200 times on the season, they're all in. And some people will question it, say, can he get hurt? Can he sustain that? Doesn't matter. He hasn't been hurt. He's been able to sustain it all year long, likely going to sustain it through the playoffs. And that unique combination. I know they wanted to play Tennessee, not because they didn't respect them. They have a great deal of respect for Tennessee. But they've played Kansas City. They've played New England. They've played Houston. They think they have an advantage in playing Tennessee for the very fact that Tennessee has not seen Lamar Jackson yet. Because you can't duplicate it. You can't emulate it in practice. And until you get on the field and see the speed and the way that he can get outside, it takes getting used to. The teams that have a chance to play it the second time, like we saw last year, San Diego, or I should say L.A. I'm from L.A. I still can't call them the L.A. Chargers. But the Chargers played substantially better the second time than they did the first time. And so that's the challenge for Tennessee. Can they get very quickly a grasp of how to play a Lamar Jackson?
As you mentioned, the Titans' offense, since they switched to Tannehill, has become pretty dominant. We don't talk about the Ravens' defense very much, but they're a pretty darn good defense. What stands out to you about them?
Well, first off, you're not going to run in the interior. They are so big and so physical with Brandon Williams. They added Pecco. I mean, where they are vulnerable is on the edges. They're a little smallish, and that's obviously where Derrick Henry can do a lot of damage. You've got to make them drop the extra guy down into the box. And even if they do, Tennessee has proven to be physical enough that they can make you pay. San Francisco ran on the edges very well. The last time they lost, the Cleveland Browns ran all over them for better than 170 yards. Now, Brandon Williams was hurt, and they had some injuries. So they're a better team than the one that lost to Cleveland way back, 11 weeks ago, 12 weeks ago. But if you're going to run on them, it's going to have to be on the edges.
Brian Billick is with us from the NFL Network, former Ravens coach. So as we mentioned, we had Jeff Fisher on earlier this week and Trent Dilfer, so we've kind of taken a walk down memory lane. I can remember growing up in Nashville, the battles between the Titans and the Ravens, and when you were there as the head coach, things would get a little chippy and chirpy at times, but what are some things you remember about those days?
Well, just that, and I think the thing that distinguished it, remembering that they were in the division now, a lot of people have to remember, it was because that AFC Central included Jacksonville and Tennessee. And certainly there's the natural rivalry we have with Pittsburgh and has been for a long time. It carried over from the Cleveland days. But the Tennessee rivalry was born out of the fact that we typically, for the time that we were there in the same division, it a lot of times came down to those. When they were good, we were good. And so usually the win or the loss was going to cost you to Tennessee or Tennessee to Baltimore. So that it was what I liked about it. The rivalry was truly born out of the competition, not just some sheer angst or you have natural rivals that you just have but the fact that the rivalry was truly on the field because it typically a loss really cost you.
Do you think, and I, from what you just said about the Ravens side, but with the Titans, I know they had rivalries, with obviously Pittsburgh as the Oilers, but I felt like you guys, that was the first Titans rivalry because of just those early battles that you both teams had.
Yeah, and it was also because it's not a rivalry if one of the teams isn't very good and can't win. For instance, for the Baltimore fans, when I got here, Jacksonville was a big rivalry. And it was a rivalry because they'd never beaten Jacksonville. And now we weren't a rival to Jacksonville because they kicked our ass for however many years prior to, they didn't care. So it wasn't a rivalry to them. That's why I'm saying I think with the Tennessee, it both teams over a period of time, when one was good, the other was good. And that's when the rivalry really begins to grow because that head-to-head now is going to have consequences. Clearly the most notable one. We came into Delphi Stadium and they had not lost there, and we came in and beat them and then came back in the playoffs and beat them in what was supposed to be their Super Bowl run. So that certainly is going to enhance a sense of rivalry when one team makes another team pay like that.
Back to this game, you were talking earlier about the Ravens offense and trying to contain them. Why do you think Dean Pease, Titans defensive coordinator, would be the guy for that job?
Well, because he's a great coach, and he recognizes what it is you've got to do. And you got to change it up a bit. You have to it goes back to the Belichickian. And remember, he was on New England staff. The Belichickian, you got to stop what they do best. At the end of the day, that's what you've got to do. And if the other aspects of it can beat you, then so be it. They're just a better team. And that's why I say I'd be shocked if they try to play the Ravens straight up. They'll learn very quickly if they do, if they think they're going to get home with a four-man rush, if they think they can just keep the ends only with a four-man rush and keep Lamar Jackson inside the pocket. I'd be shocked if that would be the approach because so far nobody's been able to do that. So you're going to have to take the different approach. Yes, you leave yourself vulnerable at times, but as I said, they're excellent down the hashes. If I were coordinating the defense, I'd give them anything they want outside the numbers because they haven't, on a consistent basis, shown that they could do that. Because every defense can't stop everything. There are vulnerabilities. And the strength of our defenses over the years, whether it was Marvin Lewis or Mike Nolan or Rex Ryan or eventually Dean Pease, that they made it very clear, guys, this is what this defense does. Now, if we're vulnerable in the flat and they throw it to the flat, then so be it. That's on us because you can't stop everything. But the players have to know what the strength of each defense is, what it's intended to do. And as I keep saying, you every play you better account for Lamar Jackson, particularly outside the pocket. Or if just you bring a four-man rush and you put those ends and you don't let him outside, but you give him lanes up the middle because it's only a four-man rush, he'll beat you that way too.
Last thing, Brian, what is the, in your opinion, what is the number the winning team needs to get to get to the championship round?
You mean the number in terms of formula for throwing or running or
No, just how much are you going to need to score to win this game, in your opinion?
Well, for Tennessee, they better hope it's a low-scoring game, which means they've held on. The other thing with the Ravens that you have to look at, their typical MO has been go the length of field in the opening drive and score. Your offense comes on, they go three and out. Their offense comes on, let's remember, it's not just offense, defense, they got the best kicker in the NFL. And you get to the 40, he's going to get 3 points. So now all of a sudden you're down 10 to nothing. Now you got to change the game plan. You panic a little bit, and you get to the end of the game, and they have the ball for 36 or 37 minutes. Where they have, not say struggled, but been more competitive, is when an offense has been able to hold on to the ball, They've been able to put long drives together. Tennessee is certainly capable of that. If you're looking, if you can get to a 35 or 40 carry game, then you got a chance of beating the Ravens because it means you've taken away that time advantage. You've kept your offense on the field. You are putting a little more pressure on them, and that's going to force them to bring extra player in the box. And now you get your that brilliant young receiver in A.J. Brown, who I think is probably going to be the offensive rookie of the year, and Ryan Tannehill, who's been spectacular, to now get maybe some of those big plays down the field. As good as that secondary is, you can make plays. That's probably the box score that you're looking for.
Good stuff, Brian. I appreciate the visit. Thanks so much for doing this.
Sounds great.
All right, that is Brian Billick, NFL Network and former Ravens head coach, and did a good job of breaking down both teams. We'll come back more of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Is that the fans coming across the bridge? No? Oh, that's the movie.
Okay. Where's Coach Boone?
It's going to be interesting. I did too recently.
Yeah, because Herman Boone actually just passed away. Mm-hmm. So this is why I wanted to watch that. Very cool. Good job, Elijah.
Tomorrow night, 7:15 kickoff in Baltimore. Qadre Ismail, who, of course, played for those Ravens teams in the heyday when these two teams used to meet, he will join us in less than an hour, in the second hour of the program. Jack Youngblood, also in the second hour of the program. You just made the list. You better bring it at noon. We've got great tickets to give away, a great prize, but you're going to have to bring it. If you don't, well, we'll just keep the tickets for ourselves.
Yeah, you're very excited about those tickets.
Yes, and sad that we're giving them away. I'd just rather keep them. Also, pick six will be the same prize, so it's going to be a lot of fun here the rest of the way onto the show.
I'm sad I'm going to miss most of the show, but I'm headed to Baltimore on assignment.
Well, why can you, like, have booked your flight after the show?
I didn't book my flight.
So, I mean, what's the urgency today?
My fearless leader back there in his Titans hat wanted to get me there.
Yeah, wanted to get you there quick.
Yeah.
So what, you can have crab cakes?
Yeah. Actually, I don't like crab cakes very much. I'm not a seafood guy.
Really?
No.
Okay. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting. And look, I think it's you don't have to be that smart about football. One of the things that stood out is something Brian Billick said very, very early on is if you don't contain the edge, you're in big trouble because the Ravens are just going to...
Out of luck.
Yeah, it's going to be a long night.
But right? Everybody knows that, but they can't
do it. I know.
What I mean?
It's kind of stating the obvious, but he basically just reiterated if you can't somehow find a way... it's going to be a really, really long night.
That's why I'm really curious to see if Dean Pease can come up with something Belichickian, right, to maybe show them something that they haven't seen before, hit on something that other teams have not, to just slow them down a little bit. I think Jeff Fisher earlier in the week had a great point about the red zone. You're going to have to play great red zone defense. They won the game in New England because they got some big stops in the red zone.
You're going to have to play a great red zone offense, too, because the Ravens' defense is pretty good against it.
And they have all year.
Yeah.
Can they do it again? The Ravens easily will be the best team that they've played all year.
Sure.
I think that goes without saying. Even though they've beaten the Chiefs, they've beaten the Patriots, the Titans have beaten good teams over the last few years. But
and
the Ravens...
They hung with the Saints. I mean,
without their best weapon.
I mean, they put up 28 points against the Saints.
They hung with the Saints... And I think if they had played everybody, that game might have been even closer, if not won. And
no,
maybe a break goes their way. You know, if the Raymond call is a, you know, defenseless receiver, we could say what if.
It's a little alarming, though, but the Saints' offense is good. The Ravens' offense is better, and they gave up 38 at home to New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but a totally different way that they go about it.
We're right, because if you have that workhorse and Henry in the backfield, obviously you're going to chew up more clock. More possession, and so it's a different game. I mean, we've seen basically you take out Derrick Henry, the only chance they had was to get in a shootout with New Orleans.
But they didn't play Jeffrey Simmons in that game.
Yep.
They didn't play Adoree Jackson in that game. So they've got some guys back. Everybody's banged up. Listen, they're the underdog for a reason. Football Outsiders has the Ravens as such a wide favorite to win the Super Bowl. It's really stunning. 43.9%. They have, based on their ratings of the eight teams left, the odds of winning the Super Bowl, they've got them at 44% for the Ravens. The next highest team is the Chiefs at 19%. The Titans down at 4.5%. Obviously, this will change. You know, upsets do happen. But I'm just illustrating how efficient the Ravens have been all year long. But that being said, the Titans are a different team. It would be a mistake for the Ravens to sit there and go, well, Titans 9-7, 6 seed. They're different than that, right? Because if you look at them from the second half on, and really since Tannehill took over, they're 7-3. Is that right? 7-3. And they played a game where they rested some of their best players because they knew it wasn't an important game. So they've played about as well as anybody has in the second half of the season, other than the Ravens.
Right.
Who haven't lost in months. Well, remember, they were 2-2. The Ravens were 2-2.
Well, they were dangerously close to going 2-3, as our conversation with Ian, Ian Eagle, who told us when he did that game, that game to Pittsburgh, they could have easily lost. Easily lost, and they would have dropped three in a row and be 2-3 after five games. Just think about that.
Yeah.
That's why I think this game could be closer than people really give it credit for. I just think these two teams are playing at their best ability, and that means the Titans, and so I think it's going to be close. The Ravens probably have the edge, but I think the Titans are going to give them a run.
The Ravens probably have the edge? They're a 10-point favorite.
I know. They have the edge.
Tristan in Brentwood. Tristan, what's up?
You take probably way seriously.
The Ravens probably have an edge.
Like, people, when they talk, they just say, well, you know, probably or something like that. Yes, they have the edge. Definitively.
The Captain Obvious. They probably have the edge.
They're the biggest favorite for the weekend.
They're playing at home.
They probably have
an edge.
They're
the number one seed. They haven't lost since September.
Yeah, they probably have an edge. Yeah. Okay. Tristan, what's up?
Yes, I was wondering, like, why the Titans didn't play Vince Young back in 2008 once Chris Johnson went out. Was he on the sideline, or where was he? I mean, they could have won if Vince Young had just come in to run some.
Really?
Yeah.
So they would have won that game.
You're saying play Vince Young at tailback?
At tailback?
Or, like, just running the ball because he was a dual-threat quarterback, and he could run more effectively against the Ravens' defense that game. Mm.
So Kerry Collins, who led them to 13-3 all season, and what, they won 10 in a row? You would then have Vince Young as your running back? Collins as your quarterback?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Tristan.
I'm going to go with no.
That was the year that Vince Young went missing, right?
Yes.
At the beginning of
the first game of the season against Jacksonville. Yes.
So he wasn't really in the best standing at the time.
Well, we all remember how that all played out that week. That was a very
a little
rocky,
crazy. Yeah,
very rocky week. Very rocky week. And to this day, I will always say that the Baltimore Ravens, I watched that pile. And I know this stuff goes on. It's not like this is the first time this has ever happened. They knew Chris Johnson's injury. They knew he had an ankle injury. He was running all over them in the first quarter. And early in the second quarter, when he went, I watched that tackle, and they were twisting and grinding and rolling him around like a gator under that pile. Of course, he really wasn't rolling much. They were just kind of rolling his ankle, and he left the game not to return. And everything changed after that. Yeah. And like I said, I know that stuff goes on, but I watched. I'm just telling you, they were grinding his ankle in that game. They knew what was bothering him, and they made sure they were going to do anything and everything to make that a long day for Chris Johnson, or a short day in this case.
That was a great what if, you know, and that's why, you know, as we're kidding Chase, because he said they probably had that. I mean, when you're a big underdog, you never know what can happen in a game. I didn't think that Ravens team was solid. They were a good team. The Titans were a better team. But the Titans turned the ball over three times in that game. If I remember correctly, there were some fumbles in just unbelievable territory. Like in the, as they used to say, the plus territory.
Right.
In the red zone. Algie Crumpler had one. I think Lindale White, who hadn't fumbled all year after he replaced Chris Johnson, was down there and fumbled. A lot had to happen.
He wasn't effective that game either.
No.
Not like Chris Johnson.
Oh,
was.
No. And Chris Johnson was having
didn't
a good
he have
game.
Like 70
oh, he was really,
2 yards
he was in the
first
rhythm
quarter?
Early
yeah.
in
oh,
the
yeah.
game. And everything went awry
yep.
after that. A lot had to happen for the Ravens to win that game. Just like, even though that Ravens team was a great team, that might have been the best Titans team ever in 2000. And the Ravens win the game by getting first downs. Five first downs the entire game. Mm-hmm. Plus a box. The Titans block two punts and they go sideways, as Jeff Fisher says. The Ravens block a field goal. It goes right to the mm-hmm. guy, and he goes all the way.
Goes the house.
Plus a pick six from Ray Lewis. So a lot had to happen for them to win that game. So maybe the reverse will happen somewhere. I don't even know that has to happen for them
right.
to win. But I do think for the Titans to win this game, they'll have to make no mistakes, kind of like they have been playing. They've done a pretty good job this year of not turning the ball over. They obviously can't do that. But then they need a couple of breaks from the Ravens.
They're probably right? going to need a little luck.
If you want to go on to Baltimore, go ahead. I mean, you just go on ahead to the airport.
What time's your flight?
We'll come back and add more words of wisdom in the first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Probably. Maybe. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Congratulations, John Hines. He records his first victory as new Predators head coach. It was a nice win in Chicago. That was a fun game as he beat the Blackhawks 5-2. Colin Blackwell, first NHL goal to be completely overshadowed at yeah. the
Isn't
end of the
something?
Game.
None of that what you just named matters.
I know. completely overshadowed by what happened at the end of the game, because Pekka becomes the 12th goalie in NHL history to record a goal. In fact, I retweeted this morning Sean Shapiro, who does a great job of covering the Stars. They were playing last night, and he said that he caught Ben Bishop going into the locker room. He tweeted this out to Hudobin and said, "You're not going to believe who scored tonight." This is in the yeah. Stars locker room. He's like, Pekka scored tonight. And he said the way Sean Shapiro, in his tweet, he said they were both giddy.
Yeah, so was I. I was watching William Mace and listening. Great call by you guys. You could really hear the excitement because now
it was an explosion.
There are two goalies that have scored goals for the Nashville Predators, Chris Mason and Pekka Rinne. Even though as much as I love Mace, his was pretty
well,
weak.
Think about it. Two of the 12 in NHL
yeah.
history
are here.
They're the only
and Chris
franchise
will tell you.
To have two goalies. Obviously. They're the only franchise with two goalies.
Yeah, Chris, his bounced off somebody, right? So he got credit for it, bounced off.
Yeah, he didn't even really shoot it.
Yeah,
He was the last guy to touch the puck. The player for the other team was passing
right.
it back
and it went
and missed his target and went all the way back into the other
net. Now, Chris
does, but it still counts. Is,
right,
is Chris
still
Mason's
counts.
Goal.
And Chris is one of, I think, two or three goalies that actually have credit for a goal in both the AHL and the NHL. So that's kind of
yeah.
a cool stat.
Mace is the answer to some trivia questions.
But he is. But I heard Willie's call, but I haven't heard Pete Weber's call.
Oh, well,
so
let's hear it.
We have that.
It's awesome.
When
so awesome.
Brooks it's Bratton great. Sent the audio last night from the United Center of Pekka, it was 5 minutes long. Let's just, for people out there listening, typically player audio
yeah.
is not 5 minutes long in postgame. But
he
Pekka
has some great
was,
lines.
He was
some
on,
great lines, too.
He did. He was on cloud nine last night.
He did an interview for our broadcast with Lindsay, and he had some great comments, and I thought Brooks' stuff was great too, because they got into some other stuff like mm-hmm. did you get the puck, and he says wait a minute,
right,
I hope somebody got that puck.
Yeah,
I bet Jeremy K. Gover, for those of you that follow him, for years he has wanted to see this. I am pretty sure, I wasn't with him, but I am pretty sure he probably did a backflip, somersault, all of the above when Pekka Rinne scored, because I know I screamed Pekka and I was jumping up and down because I was excited.
He but, did sleep last night, there's no way.
No
Chris,
no.
This is classic Chris Mason, right? Because he was overwhelmed with emotion and he
yeah.
exploded. You heard Hal start bursting out into laughter. So Mace just exploded. He actually during the break apologized to me for doing that. I was like, what are you apologizing for?
That's just
natural.
Raw emotion is what you want.
I said, if there's a play where you go nuts, that's a play where you just go nuts.
No question.
And so we both went nuts. But it was pointed out by both of those guys. That shot, first of all, Pecorine was quick to say after the game, you don't try it unless it's the right situation. You're up by two, right? So it's worth the risk to go for it. Plus, the puck settled for him. He said if the puck's kind of twisting around or spinning or on edge, you don't try that. But he picked the right time to try it. And then that shot, the Blackhawks had guys back, right? They had a deep guy hovering around the blue line on the far side. Not the Predators' blue line, but the Hawks' defensive zone. He shot it over that guy's head. Kirby yeah. Dach's a pretty tall guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the strength that it takes to get that shot to where it was, let alone put it between the uprights there. Oh, my God.
That was part of the audio. It was funny. He said,
yeah.
How him and.
Yeah, he and Uzi Saros
practice it all the time.
Practice, yeah.
So, very
what a
cool
moment.
Night.
And yeah. Look, a moment.
I got to go, but that team looked different last night. You could tell there was something. Yeah, the system's not fully in place yet, but I liked how they came out in the first period. They got to work on the middle, they got to work on the second period. They can't let it get away from them. You know, I heard some taking the foot off the gas and, you know, leaning back and all that. Can't do that, but it was a good team win, and congratulations to John Hynes for getting his first win as the Predators coach.
I like the response after the timeout.
Yeah.
Chicago scores, it's 3-2. Timeout, settle the troops down, and then respond after the timeout. I like the response after the timeout.
They definitely changed the vibe, I think, in a good way to start. Now, it's just one game, but you started to see immediate differences in how they looked and how they're trying to execute their game plan in the defensive zone, the breakouts, the two things that John Hynes said that they worked out of practice. That's one practice. So hopefully they'll continue to build on that. But a great first period. Had total command of the game. Could have maybe even been up by more. So that was a good start. Remember, they're still playing without Ryan Ellis, who is a critical guy.
And they're hopefully, missing him.
Oh, absolutely. They're thin back there. Dante Favreau, too.
Favreau's another one.
Hopefully both of those guys are getting closer each day. But I liked how they were able to hang on to the lead when the storm started happening there, because that place was buzzing last night.
We had former Titans and Ravens wide receiver Derek Mason to start the show. We also talked to Brian Billick talking about the matchup this Saturday. We'll talk to Kadri Ismail in the second hour. But when we come back, we'll kick off the hour with Jack Youngblood. NFL great. We'll tell you what he's up to. We'll have a good conversation with him to kick off the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.